think one of the misconceptions about the Democratic Party is that, oh, we're godless, we don't have any values. The truth is, we have an enormous amount in common with the Christian community, and particularly with the evangelical Christian community. And one of the biggest things that Democrats worry about is the materialism of our culture, what's on television that our kids are seeing, and the lack of spirituality. And that's something we have in common.
Many people were surprised to hear those words from Howard Dean, the chairman of the Democratic National Committee, when he made them last year. He was talking about trying to bridge that gap. He says no real gap exists, but trying to bridge that gap that is perceived between the Democratic Party and moral values, social issues, and things that voters seem to care about. Now, it's no big secret the Democratic Party has undergone a big change in the last 40 years or so. But when did that change begin, and where has it left the Democratic Party now? Formerly the People's Party, a party where the values of democracy and of individual votes held a lot of sway. What happened to Southern Democrats? What happened to blue-collar Roman Catholic Democrats? Where did they go, and why, although they still seem to have a history with the Democratic Party, why in the world aren't they voting Democratic? And why is it that the Democratic Party hasn't been able to win a presidential election, at least over the long haul, keep the White House for very long? We're going to be answering those questions as we talk with Mark Strickers. He's a freelance journalist in Washington, and he's author of the new book, Why the Democrats Are Blue, Secular Liberalism and the Decline of the People's Party. You can join us. I especially want to hear from our Democratic listeners, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, live this Tuesday, November the 13th, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Mark Strickers, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me on again. It's great.
Hey, you have written that if the National Democratic Party were a sports team, it would be known as a losing franchise. What do you mean?
Well, the National Party's lost six of the last nine presidential elections. If the Democratic Party were a sports franchise, it'd be like the Tampa Bay Devil Rays or the Los Angeles Clippers.
Or this year, the St. Louis Rams, yes.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
But nobody knows this. People don't think in these terms historically, there's a reason why they've lost six of the last nine. So,
you say that the conventional wisdom about the Democratic Party today is that if all things go as some would hope, say things remain bad in Iraq, the economy spirals downward, they're going to win the White House and they'll be back on top and they'll be in a position to rebuild the party. But you say that's short-sighted. Why is that short-sighted?
Oh, no, it's not short-sighted. I mean, if all those things, if the election were held today, I mean, the Democrats would likely win. No question about it. I mean, I don't think any neutral analyst can really say otherwise. I mean, Democrats have advantages on a lot of the issues and have a competent nominee, probably, in Hillary Clinton. So, yes, no, they are ahead, but so that's not short-sighted. I mean, the conventional wisdom that the Democrats have the advantage is correct. However, they have major weaknesses that have been left unexplored.
What are those weaknesses in a general way, and then let's try and explore some of them?
I mean, the main weakness is their libertarian or liberal stand on cultural and hot-button cultural and social issues, specifically abortion and homosexuality.
Is this something new for them, weakness on the social issue, as you write?
No, not at all. Democrats have been killed on the social issue since 1972, when the events that happened in my book took place. No, this is not new at all. It's an old story. It's just a story that hasn't never really been explored.
Why, historically, did the National Democratic Party end up siding with secular liberals rather than religious traditionalists and, in some ways, what used to be a big part of their base, Southern Democrats and blue-collar Roman Catholics?
Right. The main answer is that secular liberals used this McGovern Commission, which ran from 1969 to 1972, to hijack the National Democratic Party and impose their secular values on the party. Basically, the people who go to the convention now, the delegates, these people are very culturally and socially liberal, and they don't reflect the values of ordinary folks, let alone ordinary Democrats. But yet they're writing the platform. They control where the party stands on all the issues.
Tell us more about the McGovern Commission. Most people, I dare say the vast majority of people, either don't remember it or never heard of it.
Right, exactly. Don't forget everything you know about the Warren Commission or the 9/11 Commission, but the McGovern Commission is equally as important, I would argue more so, than those commissions, basically because the effects that it's had. The commission was set up to democratize the party's nomination system in 1968, the party's nomination had not been big city and state bosses picked the nominee, but instead the commission got taken over by anti-war folks, and they decided to stick in activists as the delegates. Basically, they put through an implied quota for women, young people, and blacks, knowing that those groups would be much more likely to side with them on the major issues of the day, the Vietnam War.
Was it really about the war, Mark? Was it about ending the war at the time?
Yeah, exactly. That was entirely the issue. I mean, yeah, it's hard to imagine today what life was like in America between 1968 to 1972, when the country just seemed to be undergoing a second, kind of almost a second civil war, with students taking over university faculties and buildings, troops shooting students in cold blood, in cold blood, like it happened in Kent State and Jackson State in the South. The country was in upheaval, and the war was the primary cause of it.
So while the McGovern Commission had the result of basically bringing to power and to longstanding influence certain activist groups or activist individuals,
right,
what did it do with respect to the traditional base, Southern Democrats, white blue-collar workers, Roman Catholics?
Well, the commission marginalized those groups is the short answer for it. What the McGovern Commission did was, the main thing I mentioned earlier was that it set up quotas for three groups, women, minorities, and young people, and said that each state has to have a certain percentage, what they call a reasonable percentage of delegates for each state delegation, each Democratic state delegation, and those folks have to be in the convention hall sitting down, and these are the folks who are going to not only pick the president, but also write the platform. 1972, issues like abortion were just flaring up. Birth control had been an issue in 68. But just the Catholics and blue-collar folks, they just got sidelined.
What did it do to the general constituency of the Democratic Party?
Well, on economic issues, one could argue that the party has just stayed the same. It's always been for using government as a way to help ordinary people, blue-collar folks. But on foreign policy, certainly, issues, the party had been dragged to the left. On racial issues, the party had been dragged to the left for affirmative action and quotas. And on cultural and social issues, such as abortion and homosexuality, the party got dragged to the left. So it's just... National Party, at least, is no longer reflects the views of ordinary Americans, let alone blue-collar workers and Catholics.
We're talking with Mark Strickers. He's a freelance journalist in Washington and author of the new book, Why the Democrats Are Blue, Secular Liberalism and the Decline of the People's Party. Our call-in numbers live this Tuesday, the 13th of November, 1-800-730-2727, 505-7850, and our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Did the Democratic Party create what is often called the Reagan Democrat? Was that their doing?
Basically, yes. to put it bluntly, yes, no question about it. All of the commentators talk about the rise to power of the religious right in the 1970s, and although the religious right was a real force and did play a key role in the Republican Party in the late 70s, all this stuff that happened in the McGovern Commission, the secular liberals, the feminists, those groups came in before in the early 70s. And those secular liberals and feminists, they drove away a lot of blue-collar workers and Catholics into the arms of the Republican Party.
It's interesting.
So they were push and pull factors. I mean, there's no question that the religious right was upset with President Carter in the late 70s, but President Carter was responding to the fact that feminists had a new foothold in the Democratic Party in the mid-70s. So
it's interesting that the explanation you often hear for why working-class voters and Catholic voters defected from the Democratic Party is that they were upset over the civil rights agenda of the active civil rights work of the Democratic Party.
Right, absolutely, no question about it. And race is no question is part of the equation, but that's only half the story. It's not entirely the story. If you look at states like West Virginia, had voted Democratic in almost every election since 1932, but now since 2000, it's been a Republican state. You look at Western Pennsylvania. It's been Democratic basically since 1932. Since 2000, when cultural issues are big, it's been a Republican area. Those are Reagan Democrat areas. Everybody looks at the South, but look specifically at the Rust Belt and in Missouri, too. I mean, Missouri is less of a bellwether than it was, but there's no question that Reagan Democrats are a big presence in Missouri, and those folks have voted Republican in most elections because of what was happening, because of responding to feminists and secular liberals.
How much of the basic shift in the way industry fits into the U.S. economy had to do, especially with the blue collar workers? Some would say, well, look, factory jobs declined naturally. We went to kind of a post-industrial age, so there was less need for what the Democratic Party was offering the blue collar worker. What do you make of that?
That's true. No question about it. I mean, blue collar workers are not nearly as poor as they used to be 30 or 40 years ago. But they still have needs, and they're not getting their social and cultural and religious needs met by the Democratic Party, by just, you know, the party's pleas and abortion on demand and gay rights. And that just alienates a lot of people, a lot of folks. So, there's no question. I mean, the blue-collar workers will continue to vote Democratic if they belong to unions, and that definitely shows up in the data. But if blue-collar workers don't belong to unions, then they're split between the parties, and in most of the elections since 1972, those folks have given their votes to Republican national candidates. Now, I'm all talking here about presidential elections. My book did not look at congressional elections because you have many more local factors coming into play. But national elections, the trend is clear since 1972.
Let's see what Joe has to say, calling from his car. Thanks for waiting, Joe.
Hi. Question. It seems as though, or sounds as though, that the people holding the liberal views back in the late 60s, early 70s were a distinct minority of the population as a whole, and obviously of the Democratic Party. Is that still the case, or is this minority growing? If so, what factors do you think have affected that? Is it just that it's in our faces more, so it seems as though more people think that way? And a second question, do you see the same thing happening to the Republican Party at the national level in the sense of it being taken over by people holding views that were not or are not distinctly Republican or conservative? Thanks.
Two good questions, Joe. Thank you very much. Let's deal with the first one. Is the minority that took over after the McGovern Commission still a minority?
Yes. Joe asked a great question. No question, no doubt about it. On the McGovern Commission, it was only a handful of anti-war liberals, who I call secular liberals, who basically hijacked the party. Shocking that this could actually happen, but it was four people who really had the starring role, and they were a minority even on the 28-member McGovern Commission. So this is a minority on a small commission who are doing this, but they felt very intensely about their issues and had all the knowledge. As far as the broader issue of whether they represent a minority, yes, liberals are only about people who identify themselves as liberals, only represent a fifth of the population, 20%. By contrast, conservatives are about a third of the population. The moderates are 45%. So the moderates should be dominating American politics. The problem with moderates is that they don't, for whatever reason, care enough about politics. They don't feel intensely about being a moderate as the liberals and conservatives. And B, they're not as organized. Those things matter tremendously in politics. Basically, if you're the folks who took over the Democratic Party in the late 60s, they all lived here in Washington, D.C., and all they did was just eat, drink, and sleep politics. How many people is that true of? Very few. Everybody, we have our jobs, we have families, neighbors to talk to. For these folks, seven days a week, you know, 10, 12 hours a day. Few people are going to spend that amount of time, but these folks figured out a way to do it, and they changed American history.
Joe also asks whether or not you see a parallel in the Republican Party, similar to the one that we've watched here in the Democratic Party over the last 30, 40 years.
Yes. The short answer is yes. No question about it. I mean, the folks who run the Republican Party do not represent the views of ordinary Americans. I mean, even on abortion, most Americans do not support a constitutional amendment to ban abortion, and yet they're the ones who are calling the shots in the Republican Party. And even on economic, especially on economic issues, the conservatives are way out of line with the views of ordinary Americans about the role of government. Americans just want the government to help them out if they can get a chance. However, we'll say that Republicans are much better at brooking dissent within their own party. I mean, Rudy Giuliani is a major player in the party now. He may win the nomination. Now, in Democrats, there's no counterpart in the Democratic Party. There's no pro-life Democrat who could mount a national campaign and get the support of a lot of his support of the grassroots and his constituency. The Democrats just don't have it. It's partly because they're smaller.
Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org, or 1-800-730-2727, 505-7850. Tim is listening in his car. Hi, Tim.
Hi. I'm a socially conservative Democratic union worker that had voted for Bill Clinton on the premise that he was going to discourage abortion, even though the platform was for abortion. I see us alternating between the Republicans and the Democrats. It seems like we had a Jimmy Carter, Reagan, Bush, Clinton, and then Bush again, and now we have the Republicans apparently going to have no platform for no abortion in their presidential platform. I find it hard to vote anymore for a Democrat. Probably the last election was probably the last time I can bring myself to vote for the Democrat. I feel that we've been betrayed as far as labor when Clinton signed NAFTA, and we have this free trade. And I believe the Republicans and Democrats are undermining our Christian values and our middle class jobs.
Tim, thank you very much. Your thoughts on Tim's call there, Mark?
I mean, Tim is expressing the frustrations of a ton of people. There's no question about that. Ordinary, middle-class, working-class Americans have had it up to here with the bad values in Washington, whether it's economics or social issues. There's no doubt about that. I mean, we are a less equal, egalitarian, regular man, regular person country than we were 40 years ago. But why is that? The elites on both parties, especially in the Democratic Party, have no doubt about it. They've taken power in their own hands. But have the people let them? Yes, they have. They have not responded to the challenge. We've got to be perfectly blunt here. Regular Americans have spent too much time watching TV and not enough time out with their neighbors, organizing for not just local campaigns, but just even regular civic events. There's not that civic mindedness and civic skills that our fathers and grandfathers used to have. It's just not there, and that means that the elites in both parties have more power than the common folks. So, yes, get angry, but also get organized and do something about it. We live in a democracy. This is not an aristocracy or monarchy. I mean, the people can take power into their own hands.
Andy's calling from Kirkwood. Hi, Andy.
Well, I'm going to quote Kinky Friedman, Todd. He said regarding the Republicans and Democrats that it's just a different swarm of locusts descending on Washington. And I think that a great deal of the problem is the fact that both parties are pretty much controlled by people with a lot of money.
Andy, thank you. What are your thoughts, Mark? Mark?
He's right that people with money have an outsized influence in our system. But, you know, what should we do about that? Should we just get mad, or should we try to, should ordinary folks get organized and respond to what's happening here? I mean, the elites don't have, they don't have the numbers, they just have the money. Well, money's important, but it's not the only thing. I mean, in the last election, 110 million, million Americans voted, the 2004 election, that is. You know, that's a lot of people. You've got to, you know, masses have their own power. They don't have to be the dupes of anyone. They don't want to.
So have the people often talk about the values voter, and they simply assume that they're talking here about white evangelicals, suburbanites, and Southerners. You write an awful lot about Roman Catholic voters and how they have really made the difference, especially for the Democratic Party and its losses. Talk about that briefly with about a minute and a half before we go to this break.
Yes, sounds good. Just for today, coming up to the 2008 election, Democrats are targeting white Catholic voters. No doubt about that. You look at what Hillary Clinton has done as far as organizing Catholics United for Democrats. That's a group that's going to focus on environmental and poverty issues. You look at what DNC officials talk about, that they're targeting white Catholics who are liberal, don't care as much about abortion and those issues. So that's definitely there. And what they realize is that they've been burned. They were burned badly in 2004 on white Catholics voting against them, even when they had a Catholic nominee. But yet, you know, this has been true since 1972. So this is, as I said earlier, an old story. But, you know, white Catholics are particularly important in a lot of these states that are the swing states, Ohio, Pennsylvania, even a little bit in West Virginia, and in especially in the Southwest and Midwest.
When we come back from this break, we're going to talk more with Mark Stricker. There's about another 10 minutes left in our conversation on the secularization of the Democratic Party. A question really is, can the People's Party be restored and values beyond those of liberal secularism restored to the Democratic Party? Mark Strickers is a freelance journalist in Washington, author of the new book, Why the Democrats Are Blue, Secular Liberalism and the Decline of the People's Party. I especially want to hear from our Democratic listeners, or perhaps our ex-Democratic listeners. 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727, or 505-7850. Email us on this Tuesday, November the 13th, issuesetc@kfuo.org, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Were you raised in a Democratic Party and then your party seemed to just slip away from you so you can't call yourself a Democrat anymore? I want to hear from you. Stay tuned. 10 more minutes after this.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
This is Pastor Joe Cox, Associate Professor at Concordia University, Wisconsin, St. Louis Center. At Concordia University, you will find a Christ-centered curriculum that is tailored to the busy students' needs in the 21st century. Meeting only once a week, you can work toward an associate, bachelor, or even a master's program as you complete your college degree.
Concordia University, St. Louis Center, 314-984-8840.
Sign on at 7. Wake up with inspiration, information, and compelling Christian conversation on The Morning Show with yours truly, Paul Clayton, and co-host Diane Summers on AM 850 KFUO. We'll have some fun, too. We'll play Bible Brain Teaser on Wednesday. Talk with the absent-minded professor, Dr. Bob Weiss, professor of bioethics at Concordia Seminary, and give away some goodies, courtesy of Concordia Publishing House. It's happening Wednesday on The Morning Show on AM 850 KFUO.
Noah's Ark. Now, is it big enough for dinosaurs?
Answers with Ken Ham, whose ministry has opened a large creation museum near Cincinnati, Ohio. Well, Ken, could Noah have fit all those land animals, even dinosaurs, on the ark?
Well, when we opened our museum a few months ago, I probably did more than 100 media interviews. And the number one topic for the media to discuss was dinosaurs. They wanted to know why we use them throughout the museum as we present the true history of the world. Some of the reporters scoffed about our belief that dinosaurs were on Noah's Ark. They would ask such things as, how could Noah have fit all those animals on the Ark? There's just no way there was an Ark. I would sometimes respond, well, tell me, how many animals do you think were needed on the Ark? The response was typical, well, I don't know. Then I'd ask, well, tell me, what size was the Ark? Well, the usual response, I don't know that either. You know that's interesting. Just think about it. When an unknown number of animals can't fit on an unknown size ship, the whole thing's supposed to be a fairy tale. Remarkable. You know, the Ark was enormous. There was actually plenty of room for all the kinds of land animals needed. Noah didn't need to take a coyote or a jackal, a fox or a Great Dane. He just needed two dogs to represent the dog kind. Actually, he needed far fewer animals than what most people realize.
So what else can we say about dinosaurs being on Noah's Ark? Ken Ham tackles that question in a booklet, What Really Happened to the Dinosaurs? Read that booklet free on our website, AnswersRadio.com. AnswersRadio.com.
He is referred to as one of the most popular and influential preachers of our day. His name is Joel Osteen, and his recently published book is Become a Better You, with 7 Keys to Improving Your Life Every Day. How does the book measure up to a law and gospel analysis? That's the subject of the next broadcast.
Listen to Law and Gospel weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on AM 850 KFUO.
Here's an AM 850 KFUO salute to our day sponsor on this Tuesday, November 13th, 2007, Anita Carrer. Today's day sponsor has made a contribution to AM 850 KFUO in loving memory of her husband, Harold. Once again, a very special thank you to today's AM 850 KFUO day sponsor, Anita Carrer of Arnold.
How heartwarming it is to receive a Christmas card in the mail and to know that someone remembered you in such a thoughtful way. Birthright Counseling St. Louis is once again offering beautiful Christmas cards to send special greetings to friends and loved ones. Buying a Birthright Christmas card helps provide money for the many services offered to women distressed by an untimely pregnancy. Contact one of Birthright's 6 area offices for information. Birthright Counseling, caring for women since 1971.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Mark Strickers, author of the book Why the Democrats Are Blue, Secular Liberalism and the Decline of the People's Party. Our call-in number, 1-800-730-2727 or 505-7850. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Mark, a listener who couldn't stay on the air asks the question. You had mentioned the McGovern Commission and how not the entire commission, but even a minority of that commission, a handful of people, made these key changes that brought about major changes in the Democratic Party over time. Who were they, and was there someone behind them? How did they pull this off?
No, it wasn't a conspiracy in the normal sense of the term. I mean, the key people were Bobby Kennedy's campaign manager, Fred Dutton, Ken Bodie, who used to be the dean of journalism at Northwestern University and host of a PBS show, Washington Week in Review, Eli Siegel, former official for the Bill Clinton's administration, and Ann Wexler, a powerful lobbyist here in Washington. Those were the 4 key people.
And were they acting on their own? Were there? You said there's no great conspiracy here, of course, but were there more powerful people behind them?
No.
Wow.
It was just all them, basically. I mean, their unifying experience had been the 1968 convention and their effort to pass what was called the peace plank at the 1968 convention in Chicago. The plank failed, and to these 4 people, the world had ended, basically. All their efforts for years, for that year, tumultuous year, to get an anti-war nominee in 1968. It failed, and they were dead set to not let that happen again in 1972. They were also more upset. They're also upset that all the police brutality, I'm afraid, the last day of the 1968 convention, so they felt, you know, just that them against the world.
You say that there is a real possibility of restoring the Democratic Party to what you call the People's Party status, and it begins with several steps, first of which is to eliminate all state caucuses. Why?
Well, caucuses are anti-democratic in two ways. First, they're only held in the evening, meaning only for a few hours, not the whole day. And secondly, they require at least an hour or two of meeting and talking with folks. And it's just too much for just a normal person who doesn't care that much politics, who doesn't follow politics. Now, the caucuses are great for the activists, for people who care passionately about a couple of issues. But for just regular folks who have an array of concerns, or if their caucuses are bad.
You say that independents should be allowed to vote in all state primaries. Why is that?
Well, just more ordinary, regular folks who are going to more likely vote in November rather than early in the year when not as many people are following politics. A good example would be the state of Connecticut, where this strong anti-war nominee in 2006, Ned Lamont, won the Democratic primary in Connecticut, beating out Joe Lieberman, who had been the Democratic Party's national vice presidential nominee in 2000. So why was that? Well, that was because only registered Democrats are allowed to vote in the Democratic primary. No independents. If independents had voted in that primary, Lieberman would have won that primary race, and Lieberman ended up winning, as an example of that, Lieberman ended up winning the November election of last year because independents were allowed to vote. Lieberman won all the one heavy percentage of the independents and not as many of the Democrats, as many of the registered Democrats.
What is a superdelegate, and why do you think this certain status should be eliminated?
Well, the superdelegates are not as important. They represent about a fifth of all the delegates who sit in the convention hall in the summer. They're delegates who are just by virtue of their office, being a big-shot politician or mayor, they're able to be sit in the convention hall and be delegates. It's anti-democratic. It's not. This is so that's why I think it should be not eliminated.
And then you talk about the swing states, and you talked a little bit about them before the break. The swing states, you said, should be first in the primary season in the nomination process. What's the sense of this?
Well, that would have the effect of bringing the party back to the center, just reflecting ordinary people's views. I mean, you could do it fairness terms and saying, look, the party has just gone so far to the left since 1972, basically, ordinary Democrats, religious folks and working class folks should have a chance. They're more likely to have it in a state like Missouri, Pennsylvania, or West Virginia than they are in the big states, California, New York, even Illinois.
Do you foresee?
The most important change would be just to eliminate the delegate quotas, specifically for women. The only quotas now are for women. They're affirmative action. But those reward activist, educated, affluent women, and those women's views are just 100% pro-choice, much more likely to be gay rights. I mean, my thesis is just let the people take over the People's Party. Why is it that activists control what used to be called the People's Party? It's because of the McGovern Commission and all these rules changes that went in effect. We need the Democratic Party to get back to its former glory, I think, is that just ordinary folks need to take it back.
Do you foresee a day when the Democratic Party could put forth a pro-life plank in its platform or garner opposition to gay marriage? If so, what would have to take place for this to occur?
Well, two things. I mean, Roe versus Wade probably have to be overturned, and that would represent a huge blow to the abortion industry. So the abortion industry have less money, and they'd be put back on the defensive, and you know, they wouldn't have the hold over ordinary folks that do now. Secondly, all these structural changes that I'm talking about would have to occur. There's no way to make the Democratic Party a people's party unless well, unless there's some great religious awakening in the country, which we can't depend on. But the second thing would be to implement these structural changes. It's sort of like the NFL. When the NFL went to a salary cap, I don't know, it was 10, 15 years ago, and that was really established a lot of parity in the league. You had different teams winning every year. It was that structural change, implementing a salary cap, that meant that the huge, the successful teams like my San Francisco 49ers couldn't spend all this money. It was more towards just the average teams, and that really transformed the NFL, which the NFL has done very well as far as attendance and making money. The same sort of structural changes will have to happen, would have to happen in the Democratic Party.
With only 30 seconds, are there many Democrats in Washington who think like you?
Probably not, no. But they need to read my book, Why the Democrats Are Blue, to get a, to learn how and why they're wrong. To be all in all humility.
You mentioned at the very beginning that if the election were held today, in all likelihood, the Democrats would take the White House. But do you foresee, with only about 20 seconds, do you foresee them being able to take it back and be a majority party again?
No, I don't. The party stands on social and cultural issues are just too far to the left of ordinary Americans. I think that Republicans have an excellent shot of winning the White House in 2008, but other developments will have to occur for Republicans to do that.
Mark Strickers is a freelance journalist in Washington, author of the new book, Why the Democrats Are Blue, Secular Liberalism and the Decline of the People's Party. Thank you for being our guest.
Thank you. It was wonderful being on.
The book is published by Encounter Books. Their website address is encounterbooks.com. It's all one word, encounterbooks.com. Issues Etc. has been brought to you in part locally by Concordia University St. Louis Center. It's a place where you can get an associate's, a bachelor's, or an MBA, and classes, for your convenience, meet just one night a week. You can find out more about Concordia University St. Louis Center under the What's New section of our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Click What's New, or you can call Concordia University St. Louis Center. Here's their number, area code 314-984-8840, 314-984-8840, or just drop by and take a look. They're located at Highway 44 and 270, Concordia University, St. Louis Center. Tomorrow we're going to talk about a subject that we don't discuss a lot on Issues Etc. Usually the only time it comes up is when we're talking about the abortion issue, and then very infrequently we're going to discuss miscarriage with a round table of guests tomorrow on Issues Etc. It's one of those things that probably we should be talking about because it is quite common. It is an experience of many husbands and wives, and it is, in fact, something that we probably need to sort out. We'll do it tomorrow with that roundtable of guests. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at kfuo.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.